Don't put that in the podcast.
No, absolutely not.
This is the order of battle.
Thanks for joining the Order of Battle podcast for another episode. Joel, Jason, and sometimes A discuss collecting G.I. Joe, other 1/18 scale action figures, and in general, what sparks joy. It's a lot of things, but almost always toys. This is the Order of Battle podcast. It has been a while, and I'm sorry for that. So yeah, it's been a while, guys. In December, I went to Philadelphia for a role-playing game convention, PAX Unplugged. While there, I ran into a friend of mine, and it changed the whole weekend. And then it was the holidays and the new year, and things have been busy for Joel, for myself, for A. But I wanted to sit down and chat with Glenn about our time at PAX and about G.I. Joe. Order of Battle has never censored, but I mention in the front that Glenn and I are old role-playing friends. So this one has a few more of the old F-bombs than is normal for this show. Regardless, maybe we can get Glenn to come out to a show or two, engage with our community in the same way that he engages in the gaming community. So let's jump into it, shall we?
I was playing in a stream, right? And I was sitting right next to fucking Luke. And we were all mic'd. We thought that when we weren't talking, our mics were muted. Me and Luke are like, yeah, so anyway, right? You know, we're like, we're doing this, right? And about 7 minutes into the stream, one of the tech guys like crawl around behind us. He's like on the ground, so he's not on camera because we're live. And he taps us both, and we both look, and he's like, we can hear everything you're saying. And all they said they heard immediately after that was me going, well, fuck. Okay. So that's on a stream somewhere.
Hopefully you guys weren't talking too much shit about your GM.
We weren't talking shit per se.
Per se.
But we were talking like two grunts.
Ah.
Because Luke is a prior infantryman too.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, he was in Kicking Ass for Gas Chapter 1, Desert Storm.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's like me and him, we were talking like we normally talk.
Sure.
You know, using fuck as a comma. And they were like, you guys need to stop it. We can hear everything you say. Oh, okay. Well, fuck. Okay.
I've never heard you use fuck as a comma before. Interesting.
Oh, God.
You're such a sweet, gentle...
Got the absolute fuck up, Jay. Oh, my God. So I talked to my buddy Red yesterday, right?
Yes.
And I don't know if I told you this, but I said, hey, I need two badges for Gen Con.
Okay.
Because I need one for Evan and one for Christian, because they're going.
Those are the boys?
The two you met, actually. And I explained, Red, you know, they were bigger than me and this, that, and the other. And Red immediately was like, so do the badges need to say thing one and thing two?
Yes.
I really want to make that happen.
Is he with Monster?
Iron Wind Miniatures. The guy who used to own it and run it was a friend of mine. He sold it and retired. The guy who bought Iron Wind Miniatures, you know him, Lauren Coleman.
Yes.
Hired Red to move to Cincinnati, Ohio and run it.
Cincinnati's only 4 hours from here. Cincinnati is a huge toy town and evidently a nice gaming town. There's a lot of opportunity if you were to come out long enough for us to get outside of town. I don't know how many game companies or if any of them open their doors. I'm sure there's plenty of game shops, but I know that I've gone on a Dayton to Cincinnati and back toy shop tour. We've gone inside of a couple large toy vendor operations in that in that, you know, bourbon trail of toys. I'm sure you could probably do something similar with gaming, especially if your ex-roommate and his business are in Cincinnati.
Yep. I gotta wait. I'm waiting for Dolan to call me back.
Mm.
I gotta get your badge, tell her me and Connor are both coming, and me and him in the same room, so we share a room. And then the boys are just going to be in our room. And if you come, you can be in the room.
Yes.
There'll be five of us in one room, but none of us care.
So we travel a lot with Todd. He's Destro's toy den. We have made a game out of the secret public bathroom. Because sometimes there's me, A, and Todd in the room, and sometimes Joel, and sometimes, you know, maybe a couple others. And so it's, please don't wipe your ass with my lungs. And we go around and we look for the secret bathroom. And it's become a game of who can find the most unused secret public restroom.
There are none of those at Gen Con.
Oh, I'm sure. That is way too crowded.
A2, A3, you walk into a public bathroom at Gen Con and inevitably there'll be a guy standing in front of the sink, buck ass naked. Because they don't have a hotel room. They just sleep in the convention, you know, the convention area, or, you know, people are sleeping in their cars, you know, and I don't even get mad at those guys because they're at least trying to knock the funk down.
Sure.
I get mad at the people that, like, day two knock a buzzard off a shit wagon. I'm just like, God damn, I just want to make little care packages of, like, fucking dude wipes and like a toothbrush and toothpaste and a little mini stick of deodorant and just throw them at people. I don't think that'd go over well.
It's a gaming convention. Just put it in gaming terms. You rolled a one on your charisma.
One on charisma. You need this. Oh my God, dude.
Kind of walking backward timeline. We were just in Alabama at a show that I've never heard of before. And it was not a good action figure show. It was good Pokemon card show.
Oh.
And the place it was in Alabama was very pretty. It was right on the river. And about every third person smelled like they showered the month prior.
Mmm, lovely.
Yeah. So although it was 3-ish hours south of me, the funk made it feel like a whole other world. Just 2025, my guy. Soap even comes pre-foamed for you. Just lather.
Lather that shit up and rinse.
It's been a while since I've done this. Everything's busy. Alexander's not as interested in podcasting as he once was. My partner, Joel, his bands have all been playing and he's in several. And I've had a couple people that we've talked about doing something and it hasn't come through. And you and I have talked about doing this for a while, especially since early December. But where you're at, I think it's 3 to 5 hours, but Des Moines, Iowa?
Yeah, Des Moines not that far.
You got to come up in November for Assembly Required. I think this year it's going to be the 15th of November. Usually it's right at the beginning of November, so somewhere between like the 1st and the 6th, based on the weekend.
Okay.
Because Assembly Required is genuinely either my top first or second show of the year.
Oh, wow.
It's the show where we all move in a group, stay together, and the lobby con is amazing. And you know me in a lobby con. Give me a drink and a person to chat with, and let's ride.
Exactly.
The guy and his team that runs it, he's a designer. They're all really creative individuals. So it is papered, the signage and everything. It is done in a way that shows care and thoughtfulness around the hobby, around the theme, and around the people that are showing up, both as vendors, as guests, and as attendees. So it genuinely is my favorite show of the year.
Okay.
And we've talked about it a few times, and because of timing and everything else, you haven't come up, but
I will try to come up this year because it sounds like fun.
It's a one-day show. It's all day Saturday. In the last couple of years, he's had like a $15, you can come in Friday night.
Okay.
So it becomes like a day and a half show. But moreover, we're all running hard Friday and Friday night, and then the lobby all day Saturday, all Saturday night. And then everybody has brunch and goes home on Sunday morning. for you being used to gaming conventions, toy shows are always smaller than gaming shows. So I know there's a handful of shows around the country that Todd loves and I love and other people talk about, and I would like to get out to California to some things. But I bring up Assembly Required because it's in November and it's not too far from you. And since we live a, like an 11-hour drive in 2024, a coworker invited me out to PAX Unplugged. I had never been. She was like, listen, it's me and my wife and some other people. We're all sharing one hotel room. If you don't mind chipping in on 1/6 or 1/7 of a hotel room, we'll bring an air mattress. But just know you're going to be the only boy.
Oh, no.
Yes. That sounds incredible. Let's go.
Yeah.
I rolled out like I normally do. Okay, the show floor opens at 10. I don't know anyone, so I can't get there at 8:30 during refresh. So I bought a plane ticket and acted accordingly. And I showed up at the convention hall. It's enormous. I'm just sort of following the crowds. And I got to tell you, PAX has shit signing.
You are correct.
For as big as that thing is,
you are correct.
The signing is fucking garbage. So I don't know where I'm going. So I just follow some humans. Somehow, I completely miss the front door of the convention center. And I come in through a side door because I'm just following people. And I walk all the way up past all the gaming tables. And that floor is probably, what, 150,000 square foot?
Yeah, PAX was pretty big.
Yeah. And so I walk past all the gaming tables. And I get to a bunch of staffers holding, you know, the police no crossing rope. And as I walk up, I hear some people complaining that they're standing there. And they said, listen, you guys are welcome to come in this direction. But since you skipped the line that's been forming since 6 a.m., and they point over their shoulders and I look past them and I see this enormous line of humans, which should have been where the front door is. They were like, we're going to drop this rope at 10:15 to give the 6 a.m. to now 10 a.m. crowd, the line, a chance to get in since they did the work of standing there for 4 hours. Some people complained. Me, I leaned against a post. I don't give a shit. It's 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's one of those. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
We all get to stand in line. Mine just doesn't happen to be nuts to butts with somebody. So about 10:15, they drop the rope and I walk in and I'm on the far ass end. So I immediately walk past Catalyst Games, which at this point, I know what Battletech is. I know what Shadowrun is, but I don't know Lauren. I don't know any of the staff.
Yeah.
I walk past some dice, some other things, and I walk past this black banner or this black curtain and boom. I'm in fucking kissing distance of the Beast. You know, I knew you were going to be there, but we didn't plan anything. We didn't expect anything. 3 minutes on the floor and I'm just right in your face. That was serendipitous. It was incredible. And when I reached out to the ladies I was staying with, they were like, oh, we're going to get there around 3:00. And I was like, it closes at 5:00. What are we doing?
Yeah, that makes no sense.
You know, it makes sense based on what you want out of a convention. And you and I are of the ready to roll, ready to chat, always on type.
I paid money to be here. I want all of here.
Yes, it turned what I expected to be a really good weekend into a great weekend by running into you within 3 minutes of me walking on the floor.
Well, it was funny because like Boone tried to call me and I obviously didn't hear the phone because my deaf ass on a convention hall.
100%. Every third word, yes.
So he sent me a text. He's like, what are you doing? You know, blah, 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 blah. And I said, I'm in Philadelphia at PAX. And he immediately texts back, Jay's there. And I was like, I'll see if I can find him. And no shit, less than 5 minutes after the doors open and, you know, the throng of humanity hits the floor, you're in my booth.
Yes.
I was like, found you.
Yeah, it was nice. Not only because, you know, I packed the whole weekend in one backpack and I had to haul that bitch around until I found you. And you were like, yeah, we can throw it behind here. And of course, I knew no one at your booth.
But by the end of the weekend, you knew everyone at that booth.
Hell yeah. You introduced me to everyone.
Hell, you got to drink with Mike.
I did. One. Mike has the deepest of voices.
Yes.
Without affecting, without trying, he has the deepest of voices.
He has the, he no bullshit, has the second deepest voice I've ever heard in my lifetime.
He does not need the money, but if he was, if he ever found himself broke, he can ASMR that shit for some good cash.
Oh my God. It's like, I worked with a guy in Buffalo, New York, whose voice was so deep. We gave him a balloon full of helium and it raised his voice to my depth. Like his voice sounded like mine on helium. Super nice guy, but dear God, he mumbles.
You're subharmonic already.
Yeah.
And then you won't like articulate your lips.
But no, it was so fun because you're like, you know, we met up, we started bullshitting, and then I was like, all right, time to introduce you to people. And then I just drug your ass to everyone at the con that I knew.
And I know Mike has you with him so that he can walk around without too many interruptions.
Yeah.
I don't know that I talked Cyberpunk with him a single sentence. We talked about Star Wars. We made bathroom jokes.
Mike loves talking Cyberpunk. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But Mike is a very interesting side hobby. At PAX this year, I've known Mike for years. He discovered I'm a huge Star Wars nerd. Now we spent a majority of the show talking Star Wars. And I'm running a Star Wars game for the Artel crew at Gen Con.
That's why I need to be there.
That's why you need to be there. And the boys are going to be there. And Connor's going to be there. It's going to be a huge group.
The thing that I loved is as we were talking Star Wars, and he mentioned that he used to write for West End Games.
Love it.
D6 Star Wars.
The best Star Wars game system.
It's our bread and butter.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's probably not the most game time you have these days, but I would wager that it's still your favorite game.
I still play the shit out of Star Wars.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm not getting that call, so I don't know.
Well, I play with the boys. I play with Corbin. You know, blah, 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 blah. Eat my ass.
But yeah, I mean, it is absolutely my favorite system. I assumed it was still your favorite system, even though you know a ton of them. But Mike was showing us how he had been chopping up and customizing a 90s Power of the Force B-Wing with some modern articulated G.I. Joes.
Yeah.
So he's not only, you know, a writer and a game developer and a business owner, but he's also a toy guy.
Well, he's a huge toy guy.
Yeah, right in my wheelhouse.
But yeah, Mike is a hell of a modeler.
Yeah.
He takes a bunch of different models and makes what he wants out of them and then writes the technical data to match the model.
I mean, it must be nice to be Mike.
Okay.
It was fantastic. But yes, you're right. You drug me around. You introduced me to him and to Lauren and
Alex.
Yes, Alex. And he owns Vox Mechanica?
He owns a lot of things, but Level Up Dice. That's his.
Level Up Dice. We ended up having a great time, and it wasn't all just business owners that you run with.
No.
You had a couple regular schmucks like myself that were with us, running around, talking shit, having a good time.
You got to meet Cliffy.
Cliff was great. I guess for the people that listen to this, Joe Fest is the big toy show.
Okay.
And it's somewhere between 5,000 to 10,000 attendees, 40,000 square foot. There was a lot of complaining at PAX about how small it was, and it's, you know, 120,000, 150,000 square foot, and the attendance was 35,000 to 40,000 people.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to put it in perspective. In 2024 Gen Con, they had an attendance record, because I just verified it, of more than 71,000.
Okay.
Gen Con is insanity. PAX, to me, was a great con because it was slower, more relaxed, less people. It was just, I enjoyed PAX, but don't get me wrong, I enjoyed Gen Con, but I enjoyed PAX too because it was that whole, you know, you're not nut to butt. You get downtime to, you know, walk around and see stuff. And is it Gen Con? You really don't get that if you're working a booth.
That's fair. You are probably more appropriate for somebody like Mike at Gen Con than you are at PAX. Although, to be frank, I mean, we did see grown men cry meeting Mike.
We did.
I've seen that in the G.I. Joe community with Ron and Kirk and Larry and others. When the moment hits you and you're meeting someone that you feel has defined large portions of your life.
Oh, I understand.
I get that emotion. But I think Gen Con is probably going to be where you're more important to Mike.
Whatever.
If it's that crowded. Listen, I mean, he made the salt and pepper reference. And if that's...
He did.
If that's what I have to do, then I'm fucking down for it.
Oh, don't get me wrong. If your ass goes to Gen Con and you'll be fucking walking around and we'll be playing the one game.
Yeah, I don't think I'm an appropriate security next to you, but sure, whatever. I'll play
the
part. But just
the way his voice, the way his voice resonates through that convention.
Yes.
Noise, just white noise din.
Yeah, so it was solid. I think the first night we ran until, about 2 a.m.?
Yeah.
The second night we ran until about 4:30, I think, is when I got back to my hotel.
Yeah.
Both nights, from the top, I went to the hotel to meet up with my crew, drop my stuff, get the lay of the land, figure out where the hotel is. And it was in the 30s, 20s or 30s in the evening. It was like in the 30s to 40s during the day. But it was a block and a half, two blocks. I don't know. I walked it, put earbuds in to protect my ears from being cold, threw my hood on, and just walked the two blocks. It was fine. So we get in the hotel room. There's half the crew. I told you there was going to be like six women and me. They order food. And I was like, order food in the hotel. Why are we not going out? And they were like, well, we're waiting on our people, yada, 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 trying to figure that out.
That makes sense.
It does. But you know how I am. I'm restless and I'm at a show. So I'm ready to move and move and move. So I find out that the rest of the crew is not going to get in till after 9 p.m. And I'm like, all right, so you missed all of day one. I said, here's the deal. My convention brain, when it kicks in, I'm only going to sleep 4 hours. I want to sleep 7. But I'm only going to sleep 4. So I'm going to show up after you're in bed. I'm going to leave before you wake up. And I'm going to try to be as quiet as humanly possible while showering. So where we're standing there, you text, Jay, why are you not here? Oh, because I'm on the way. We sit down in your hotel room, have a drink, and then head out to meet people.
Yeah.
As one does. And we met a lot of people. Lauren and Mike and everyone else, Alex, they all introduced you to a bunch of people, introduced me to a bunch of people. We got to meet new people, which is always fun, as well as hanging out with your regular crowd. When I got back to the hotel at 2:30, everyone was asleep. The air mattress was already made. So I slipped under the blankets, changed into jams, rolled onto my stomach to minimize snoring, crashed. I was the first awake. I showered. I left.
Yeah.
I showed up on the show floor since I knew they had this like the line and the rope and everything. I showed up on the show floor at 10:30. And again, I didn't walk through the front door because I didn't know where it was at the time. I didn't figure out where the front door was until day two when you and I were walking out the front door to go smoke.
That's when I made friends with that security lady.
Absolutely.
Dude, come on. That was funny. I made friends with her like 15 minutes into the show.
You have a habit that needs to be protected.
And I wasn't going to walk through all that bullshit to go smoke. I was like, I just want to go out this door and smoke. Will you let me back in? And she's like, I got you.
Yes. She was your friend from that moment forward. And she took care of us.
Mm-hmm.
Night two, they had gaming plans that went until like 10 p.m. So I barely saw them on day two.
Weren't we still at dinner at 10?
Probably. When I got back at 4:30, everybody was asleep. I got up at 8:30. Showered, got out of the hotel room by 9. Everybody was still in bed. I think Monica's wife was out of bed by the time I left the hotel room. I think she got up and went down to breakfast. One person made it awake before I snuck out of the room. This is just how my con brain works. This is why usually at the end of Sunday at Joe Fest, people are like, dude, you look tired. And I'm like, how dare you? Because I don't sleep. I run. We did not get shithoused.
Mm-mm.
We drank, but we stayed relatively easygoing. And then Sunday, you and I shared an Uber back to the airport. And I ran into Tommy in the airport, which I thought was funny. I'm at a gaming convention. I know two guys that I used to play Warcraft with 20 years ago. Hung out with them a little bit on the floor, but never hung out with them outside of the show. And you. So I knew three people plus, Monica, who invited me to join her crew, or at least to room with her crew. you introduced me to everyone you knew. And every time we were in a group of people, either the sweatshirt or the arm tattoo, people would start talking about G.I. Joe.
Yes.
I was like, this is a gaming convention. We don't have to talk about Joes. And they were like, no, no, no. Glenn, or no one called you Glenn except for me and Mike. So Beast said you were a G.I. Joe expert. And I'm like, well, I know a lot about G.I. Joe. I hang out with the experts. Mm-hmm. You know, when I know Pat Stewart and Brian Kaufman and so many others, I'm cautious with the word expert, but I know a lot. I was having fun. I was having fun. I was surprised how many people in the gaming world were like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm in gaming because I used to play with G.I. Joes. And I'm like, I would expect I'm in gaming because I watched the D&D cartoon.
Yeah.
To take it way far back, the first time that our mutual brother introduced us, your first question to me was, and I guess I can throw that back at you since we're recording, what's your 5-man team?
Yep, that is a great question because, you know, everybody's like, oh, you got to have so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so. And you're like, but do you though? Do you though? Because everybody looks at me weird except you when I said on my 5-man team, I would have Chuckles
first.
They're like, why would you have Chuckles? And I'm like, because that dude's got a superpower of, hey, I know a guy. Now, is it just G.I. Joe 5-man team or G.I. Joe and Cobra 5-man team?
I mean, this was the question you threw at me with the first minute and a half we met.
I would...
Like 2 decades ago.
2 decades. Dear God. Like, I'm going to have to... I'd probably stick with my original team. I would have Chuckles, Destro. I really like Zartan. And, you know, Snake Eyes, Storm Shadow. They're kind of givens. If you're, you know, but it also depends on what you're going to do. Are you going for just, you know, I'm going to fuck everything up and fuck everybody that's in there? I'm going to take Short Fuse and Rock and Roll then. I want, you know, a heavy machine gunner and I want a mortarman. I love mortars. I was a mortarman, so I love mortars. But you got to have Destro and Chuckles.
Destro, Chuckles, Zartan, Storm Shadow, Snake Eyes. That's a pure infiltration group. Destro hands out all the tech. Chuckles opens the front door and everyone lives inside for about 6 months before anybody knows.
Yeah. But if, like I said, if you want just, I'm going to kill everything and to hell with collateral damage, Rock and Roll, Roadblock, Short Fuse.
Downtown for 2 mortarmen.
Yeah. Downtown. You could go with Bazooka. Or another person, you know, instead of like Storm Shadow, Shipwreck. The dude was a SEAL. You know, Shipwreck was a SEAL. You know, Beachhead was like, what, a ranger or some shit? I mean,
yep.
What cracks me up is now that I've done the army thing and I'm retired and all that stuff, is now a lot of the card, you know, that I read as a kid, they make a lot more sense now. I understand all that jargon and all that shit. How many G.I. Joes are like E4s and E5s? Most of them.
I mean, more than 80%?
Yeah.
Almost all of them. There's a handful of officers, there's a handful of leaders, but the vast majority are in the E4 to E5 range.
Yeah.
And since G.I. Joe followed the doctrine of expert in the field has command, an E4 could be in charge of a mission with officers and E9s on it if he's the expert in the field.
Yeah. But it was just so funny because it's like, now I understand all that jargon. And I'll never forget being in the movie theater watching, you know, the G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra movie that came out years back. And just the overall groan that echoed through the crowd when Duke was an officer.
I was sitting beside Boone. Boone, which we've now referenced a couple times. Boone is someone I've known since 93. You've known since 97, 98?
98, 99.
Boone is very much my brother. Mm-hmm. Boone is very much your brother. Mm-hmm. And so when he introduced us, we went, I mean, your cousin at best, because we're just now meeting. Like 5 minutes in, we were like, okay, maybe.
Okay, we can do this. We can make this happen.
I am the small one with the three of us.
You are.
Boone and I were sitting in the theater together. When they announced that he was an officer, there was not a level of groan throughout the theater. There was a Boone loudly going, that's bullshit. And the conversation he and I had around Duke being an officer, I know what a first sergeant is. I know what a top is. I know the point. But I didn't serve. I wasn't there. I don't have the nuanced and the detailed, maybe curmudgeonly, opinion that like you or he or other prior servicemen would have. But it very much informed the opinion that I've held ever since of you can change the height, the weight, the gender, the sex, the skin tone, the city they're from. You can change everything about a character as long as you keep like the three main core tenets of a character. Mm-hmm. And changing first sergeant who refused officership into a captain is a larger change than, say, turning a white dude into an African American or a woman into a man. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because it is such a fundamental, whereas the others are...
Yeah, the others are whatever.
The others are you're born with, and this is like a fundamental character of the character, which I know is bad English, but you get where I'm at.
I do.
And that had always informed, not just with G.I. Joe, but with all things. It was a thing that I kind of understood, but that conversation of the difference between a captain and a top very much helped melt down character development into like, what's the three main tenets of the core, for me at least. And that movie is what it is, but sitting next to Boone and listening to him loudly proclaim to a quiet theater that's bullshit was hilarious.
Oh, hands down. Because it's just, I mean, Boone's still testy about it, as am I. It's like, no, Duke's the first sergeant. He's top. He's not no damn 03.
That also gets back to, you mentioned you are a mortarman and how short fuse is in name, in curmudgeoniness, and in job specialty, very much your man. When you were looking for other mortarmen in the Joe line, did you know about Downtown before I sent it to you, or?
I did not. I just knew about short fuse because Downtown was a later G.I. Joe, and I had gotten out of collecting. I had gotten, you know, I had discovered, you know, perfume, gas fumes, and yeah, stuff like that. I was unaware of that.
And so when I sent you Downtown, I sort of prefaced like, you know, by the way, this is a, you know, I don't know how accurate this is. You know, I was trying to like hedge just in case you were like, what the hell is this? But you seem to like Downtown despite his, you know, more sci-fi elements versus short fuses, OD Green.
OD Green, 60 millimeter mortar. I'm a light fighter mortarman. Yeah. Dude, don't get me wrong. He's a mortarman, so he's good in my book.
With G.I. Joe, I mean, because you like Zartan and the ninjas and Destro, do you lean more sci-fi, military, or do you like that split down the middle?
You know, it depends. Like I said, what type of mission are we running? Because specialists in their field, they all go in a toolbox. You get the right tool for the job. If you're hanging a picture on your wall, you don't grab a wrench to pound the nail. You grab a hammer. If you want to fly a helicopter, you call Wild Bill. He's like a CW4 or CW5. That's what he does. I fly helicopters and, you know, talk shit from my cowboy hat because I'm a cab officer and, well, or I'm a cab chief. That's what we do. You know, if you want to blow shit up quietly, you call Firefly.
So you don't lean heavily sci-fi or traditional military. You like split down the middle because the job is the job.
The job is the job. You achieve the mission with the tools you have at hand. But yeah, it's just that's the fact of it.
I know it's been a very long time, 2 decades since we've met, and you originally posed that question to me. But I still remember I was not wanting to use a ninja because I felt like a ninja was what everybody used. And you were like, what's wrong with using Snake Eyes? Use Snake Eyes. And I was like, ah, sure.
Snake Eyes was classified as a commando.
He was a commando, that's right.
Overt operations.
Yes.
That means he's got demolition skills and stuff like that.
V1 came with an explosive pack.
Yes, it came with a satchel charge.
Satchel charge and an Uzi. Like, you cannot be more 80s than that.
Hey, it's an Uzi. Just go with it, man. Just go with it. Love Uzis.
To this day, when I look at a Snake Eyes action figure or a Snake Eyes drawing, and they give him like a proper machine gun or AR or whatever the, you know, blah, 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 I'm always like, give this man an MP5. Give him something small. He needs something to clear a room with, not fire across the field.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, if you went with like today's, you know, today's tech, he would have probably like an HK MP7.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a personal defense weapon. It's small, it's compact, it packs a punch.
You can strap to him.
Yeah, I saw a drawing a while back, and it was an amazing drawing of Snake Eyes, and it was cooler than shit because he had, you know, all the pouches and shit on, and, you know, he had knives and grenades, and I'm like, okay, I can see all that. And he was rocking a suppressed 1911. I go, there it is. I'm like, there it is, because you know what? Sometimes short, fat, and slow gets the job done. And 45 hits like a truck, so yeah, I could see that. But yeah, I saw a drawing somebody did of Snake Eyes with like this Phantasmagoria giant ass rifle, and I'm like, that's not Snake Eyes.
Give him a small weapon that if it can't get through the body armor, can at least push you backward.
Yeah.
I've always liked Scarlet and Chuckles as a good team.
Mm-hmm.
I've always liked Rock and Roll and Roadblock as a good buddy cop. I have written no small amount of story with Roadblock, Rock and Roll, and Chuckles.
That would be epic because Chuckles would start the fight and help finish them. But just because, you know, Roadblock is a Creole, isn't he?
He's a Biloxi, Mississippi boy. So he's not technically Creole, but he is a bona fide French culinary school chef.
Yeah. You know, and Rock and Roll is just some boy from, you know, San Diego, and he's a surfer.
I see both of them as being too big to be bothered with being big. You know, it's that, you know, everybody talks about how big I am, but I never do. I, you know, everybody mentions how swollen and how large I am, but, you know, I never talk about it. They're not that. You and I know that. Yeah, I see Chuckles causing the problem, Roadblock and Rock and Roll having to mop it up, while Chuckles stands next to Shipwreck at the bar, drinking and making jokes about the two lumbering hulks having to do all the work.
Yeah, I've always pictured Chuckles as the quintessential dirty fighter.
Yes.
Like, he's the guy that's going to hit you in the head with a beer bottle, break it, and then shiv you with it.
Yeah.
Because I don't care how nasty it is. I want this done because you're getting blood on my Hawaiian shirt.
I'm not telling you I'm pretty, but I'm too pretty to get hit in the face, so I'm going to choke the shit out of you. While I'm choking you, I'm going to be like nut-racking you with the other hand.
Yeah, pretty much.
He's definitely dirty. He's violent. When I read the card in 87, I was captivated by Chuckles. He was the door opener. It was not until I read the comic book and I saw the cartoon that I had ever thought of Chuckles as being muscular or brutish. Because in the comic, he's a no-neck, thick boy. And in the cartoon, he picks up a missile and throws it at a...
Yeah, we're going to gloss over that part.
Think about Beachhead. Everybody loves the cartoon Beachhead because he's loud and obnoxious and yells at everybody. But if you read his file card, it's like he barely talks ever because he's a fucking ranger.
Yeah, who does clandestine operations.
Right. I've always leaned file card first, comic book second, cartoon third.
That's fair.
In terms of world building, the comic book certainly sets the narrative. But in terms of character, file card first. Because the file card is what Larry wrote to understand and to capture the character. And then Kirk or whomever on his team took those one-pagers down to the dossier that we got on the back of the card. But Chuckles, if you can't send a ninja to break in, you send Chuckles to open the door from the inside.
Yeah, because he knows a guy.
Because he knows a guy.
And he is a smooth-talking, debonair, he's an operative.
He's an 18 charisma.
Yeah, charisma was not a dump stat for Chuckle. You know, to put it in old D&D terms, the way I explain Boone to people is he's got 18 double-aught charisma.
Yes.
Not a dump stat. And Chuckles is just like, hey, know a guy, I can do this. I'll open the door. You let the Ugthor smash him's in, and I'm gonna go have a drink.
Yeah, I mean that's why when we first sat down and we both had Chuckles on our list and we were like, oh, I see you. This is before the Cobra miniseries came out that made him popular in the Joe community. You were like, that's interesting. Why did you choose Chuckles? And I was like, well, because Chuckles is your inside man. He's your infiltrator through getting to know people, sliding in, being slick about it, joining the group, and being that inside intel guy versus Lady J or Scarlet, who are also intel, but they are more outside, whereas he is deep cover inside. And I went, well, why did you choose Chuckles? And you said, because Chuckles has a superpower. And I went, huh? He goes, knows a guy. And I went, we just said the same thing. You go, yeah, but I called it a superpower. Yeah. I was like, that's fair. We then went from that conversation to rolling dice until like sunrise.
Yes.
It was a pretty quick and easy friendship from that point on. But, you know, walking around with you at PAX and you being like, this is my brother Jay. He's the Joe expert. And everybody goes, well, I see the arm. I see the shirt. What's going on? The number of people, whether it was like the guy running the booth or the lady that was game testing or the company owner, all of them being like, oh, dude, I grew up with Joe's. I did this. This is my favorite Joe. Why did they do this? What do you know about that?
Yep.
In the Joe community, most of us already know this, or we just assume we all know it. And when somebody messes up, oh yeah, Battle Armor Cobra Commander's from 88, everybody goes, Kirk. What'd you say, bud? Who's pulling your card? Did you lose your nerd card? 88, is that what you said? You know? And so outside of the Joe community, you know, most of the time I'm around comic book people, they want to talk about X-Men or the Avengers. So being in a gaming community where nobody wanted to talk about D&D and everybody wanted to talk about G.I. Joe was interesting. It was fun. I enjoyed it quite a bit. PAX was a lot of fun, and it made me miss the gaming community in a way I haven't missed it since the 90s. And some of that is a point of privilege, right? I've had the same gaming group since the 90s. But yeah, for the most part, I've had the same core gaming group for 30 years. Some people come and go. So I haven't really needed like the larger gaming community, but it did make me miss it walking around PAX. PAX had enough board game and card game samples, demos, that I could have spent the entirety of 3 days doing only that. Had enough pay-to-play games that I could have spent the entire 3 days just paying for a seat at a table, whether Dungeons & Dragons or Blood on the Clock Tower or whatever. There was enough shit to buy. I could shop the entire time. There was so many different things you could do the whole day or the whole weekend. For a gaming is the center of my Venn diagram person, you really need to come to something like PAX with a game plan. And so I'm assuming Gen Con being a little bit bigger and more populated, you very much need to have a game plan if you're going to walk onto that floor.
I would recommend it. I don't have a game plan.
I never have a game plan.
I don't care.
Right.
I know what I like. I know what makes me go, ooh, shiny.
Yes.
And 99% of the time, I'm guided by, I know what I like. But that 1%, if you're walking down an aisle and you go, hold up, what is that? And then you go over and you're like, oh my God, I never knew I needed this, but now I need this.
That's how I treat comic shows and toy shows as well. I never have a plan. Mm-mm. My plan, as it were, is to be social.
Yeah, I'm an introvert with extrovert tendencies, but I can be very social if I want to be.
Yeah, I'm an extrovert with extrovert tendencies.
I know, Jay. I know. I know.
We work well together.
All we needed was Boone.
The only time I ever see you slide behind someone is when you're like, I'm socially done, you take over. And I will watch you physically, like, sort of distance yourself. Not noticeably so, but I've known you a while, and I don't see you back up from people very often. So when you just put like a shoulder behind me, I'm like, all right, he's distancing the conversation. Like, he's done.
Yes.
And I've seen you do that with Boone as well. Whereas Boone and I tend to be like, oh, is it time to leave? Okay, well, let's say bye for 4 hours.
It's funny when Boone is done.
Yeah.
Because then Boone goes behind me and I'm like, okay, I'm stepping forward now. And now I get to be the carrot and he's going to be the stick. Game plans are great. Plans are awesome. They're a list of ideas that go out the window the minute the first shot's fired. Yeah, going to a convention with a game plan is awesome until you hit the convention and you're surrounded by 50,000 people.
I recommend a game plan to everyone that shows up at shows. I personally, my game plan is to be open to seeing the weird shiny thing while I'm walking between conversations. I have found that I do best when I'm tabled with Destro's Toy Den than when I have my own booth, because I will not sit behind a booth. I do not sit at conventions. I just don't believe in it. Sitting makes you sleepy and tired because your body is at rest. So I stand at conventions from open till close. I sit at bedtime. Doing what we did at PAX, which you were on the clock with Mike, and I just sort of was nearby because Mike was like, "Beast, I need to walk. Jay, you coming?" Which is only about a third the deep of his voice.
"Beast, oh, I need to go talk to Black Oak. Okay, salt. We're walking." "Okay, got it." You mentioned a game plan. A couple years ago, I went to Kansas City Planet Comic Con.
Love Comic Con, but I have not been since 2018.
You should come this year to Kansas City. They got some killer guests.
What's the dates? That's okay. I'll look it up. You don't have to do the labor for me.
It's in March, and you can just stay at my place.
I just have to figure out if it's conflicting with Atlanta.
So a couple of years ago, Con and I went to Planet City Comic Con, and I actually went there with a game plan that year. I was looking for one thing.
Oh, yes. I remember this game plan. Yes.
I was looking for G.I. Joe issue number one. That was all I was looking for.
We had a good conversation about quality and price. And
I found it and I got it. And then I had it labbed and graded and all that shit. So, yay me. But now I want to buy the anthologies.
Yes.
I want to get those so I can read them. Because I haven't read them since I was a kid.
So you can get those from the comic book shop. So they did the Kickstarter for the hardback versions. You could probably find them on eBay, but they're going to be expensive. But you can also get them from your comic book shop. It's going to be in 3 or 4 volumes. They're nice and like 3-4 inches thick each. But if you hit up your local comic shop, they're still in print. Have them order them for you. It's going to be a hefty price, but it's going to be a fraction of what trying to buy them in floppy is going to cost. Or trying to find all 15 of the old IDW trades. Some of those are going to be like $150 each versus, you know, maybe like $200 or $300 for the whole damn set with the new thing. And I don't know the exact price, but your comic book shop should be able to tell you. And because they can order them as you need them or can afford them, you don't have to buy them all at once.
Yeah, I want to get the anthologies. I really want the hardcover ones because and you know me, I believe in buy once, cry once. And, you know, only rich people buy cheap shit because they can afford to replace it.
True. With the hardcover, there's a Joe version and a Cobra version. The interiors are the same. It's just what exterior you like. They're gorgeous. They're perfect in every way except for one.
Okay.
So they're the four hardback anthologies, and they come in this nice quarter thick cardboard case that has these open doors. So you can display it as the box. You can open it and display it as an open box with the books inside, or you can take the books out, right? Here's the one thing that they fucked up. The one problem with that set was they put Yojo or all G.I. Joe Access something on the Joe one, and on the Cobra one, it says Hail Cobra. But they put it side justified. So if you lay it the way you would open it, the writing is sideways.
Yeah, I'm like picturing that, and I'm like, that makes no sense, but whatever.
It is the one failure of an otherwise perfect execution.
That's on my to-get list down the road, is the anthology collection. Because, well, I'm a nerd, and I grew up playing with G.I. Joe, and then I became G.I. Joe.
Have you met Larry Hama?
Nope.
Larry is incredible. You and I have had interesting lives. He has had an interesting life. I've met him a handful of times. Every single time I've met him, it's been memorable. You know, I still have the drawing he did for Alexander when A was 5, and he pulled A away from me to go sit and talk with Alexander without the adult. He has told me some inappropriate stories of sitting beside Stan Sakai of Usagi Yojimbo. One of these times, you need to come out for ICCC. It's a Star Wars convention here in Nashville. I don't think it's a great convention. I think it's overpriced, under-delivered, but...
Fuck it, we'll do it.
And I know you're not a big signature guy, so, you know, all of the different Star Wars signatures you can get, not a big deal. But there's two things that I think you would really enjoy. One is Kim Simmons. Are you familiar with the name? Mm-mm. Kim Simmons is the man who shot Luke Skywalker. So he was the guy who either took the photos or led the team that did all of the packaging art for the figures 77 to 83.
Oh, okay.
His photography book is like $250.
Oh.
It's gorgeous. And he is always set up right next to Ron Rudat, the only G.I. Joe guest at this Star Wars show since year one. And Ron is the guy who designed the Cobra symbol. He designed the first 120-ish G.I. Joe figures.
Oh, okay.
Ron and his wife, Jenny, they're sweethearts. They're very lovely people. Ron is a bit of an introvert who has to turn it on when he has a table and he's talking to people. Jenny is an extrovert that doesn't know how to turn it off.
Love it.
Yes.
Let me know when that convention is and I'll see what I can do.
I think it's in April, but Joe Fest number 2, years and years ago, I'm having breakfast with Kickley, who's an artist. He's a painter. And Ron and Jenny sit down beside us. And Ron and Kickley start talking art. They both pull open their sketchbooks and they're showing each other like sketching and like Ron's asking Kickley about how he uses gouache and Kickley's asking Ron about design stuff. Jenny and I start talking and I don't know them that well at this point. Like I've met them a few times, we're friendly as acquaintances are. So 4 hours later, we get up from breakfast and not because I had a great conversation with Ron or even that I spoke to Ron and Kickley the whole time we sat there. They continue to sit there and talk about art because Jenny and I were talking. You had this motherfucker who you know well too well and a female equivalent with no one telling us it was time to be done.
That's awesome. I mean, I want to go. I've been looking on, you know, like Facebook Marketplace around, you know, here in Kansas. And there's a lot of guys in like Kansas City that are selling G.I. Joe collections. And I'm like, ooh. Oh, can't afford that.
It's gotten harder to find a good, affordable lot. You still can, but everything in our world's expensive these days. But you know what Kansas City has G.I. Joe-wise? I know you're familiar with the 501st.
Yes. I ran into the 501st guys 1 year at Kansas City Planet Comic Con.
Kansas City has the Tiger Hawks, which G.I. Joe has the finest, which is the G.I. Joe equivalent to the 501st. Or the 501st equivalent, the cosplay community, is called the Finest. And Kansas City, that region, their garrison is called the Tiger Hawks. That is an incredible group of G.I. Joe cosplayers. And they do some Star Wars stuff as well. They do some other fandom things. But if you ever wanted to get into costuming as a G.I. Joe person, there's garrisons all over the country, but I don't know of any as fine as the Tiger Hawks. That's not an insult to anybody I haven't met, but I'm telling you, the Tiger Hawks. And they show up to Des Moines. They always have an awesome setup. This year, they built a castle wall for the Destro theme, the Iron Grenadier theme. They all came as Iron Grenadiers, Sergeant Major, the Baroness, Destro.
That is awesome.
Last year, for the Cold Slither theme of Assembly Required, they all came as Dreadnoughts, and they built Zartan's swamp skier strong enough for people to sit on and take photos. They are fantastic. They, at Planet Comic Con, if you've seen them, they've built the Bivouac. They had the Watchtower.
Yeah.
That's them. So you've seen them at Planet Comic Con, but actually, like, meeting them, getting to know them, Chris and Alex and everybody, they're fantastic. There's three or four that I know really well, but everyone I've met has been really generous with their time and energy. And yes, they come hard when they do a setup. You know, at something like Planet Comic Con, they bring the entire bivouac. They bring the ammo crate. One of the guys brought Scrap Iron's missile launcher.
There's a character that I always got a kick out of.
Scrap Iron was always one of my favorites. And when Alexander was 7 or 8, he realized we had 2 or 3 scrap irons, so he decided he wanted army build scrap iron. And I now have a bucket of missile launchers, both the original black and accessory pack red.
Oh, man, accessory packs. That jumped in my head the other day. It's like, well, I got 6 accessory packs for Christmas, so now I have a shit ton of AKs. They're the wrong color, but I got a shit ton of them.
Oh, I love accessory packs. I don't think accessory packs get the proper love in today's market. Nobody makes accessory packs, and I love accessory packs. I would love to see Classified G.I. Joe come out with like a proper plastic, you know, weapon crate for and weapon packs.
That would be awesome.
I don't need it to be 9.5 out of 10 realistic. I need it to be fucking fun to shove in a figure's hand. I need it fun enough to dig in the dirt again.
I need it fun. I want it good enough that I could set up a diorama and have a crate full of M16s or AKs. You know what I mean?
I am looking forward to Gen Con. I need to look up the dates and make sure, as I'm looking for a new job, having been recently laid off, I put that on the upfront calendar.
Yes.
Please understand that I'm gone for most of June, being at G.I. Joe shows and Gen Con. Speaking of G.I. Joe shows, so Joe Fest, I think you would enjoy Joe Fest, but the week after Joe Fest is DFW, which is Dallas-Fort Worth G.I. Joe Convention. I don't know what kind of a drive Dallas is for you, but we are considering coming down for that for the first time. The guy who runs that show, Greg, is a friend. This last year, it and Joe Fest were on the same weekend, and I wasn't going to skip Joe Fest for it. But in 2025, they're on different weekends, so I'm considering coming down.
Dallas-Fort Worth, I want to say, is about a 10-hour drive for me.
Shit, it's a 12-hour from here. I thought it would be much closer being in old Kansas.
You ever driven in Texas?
Yeah, Texas is enormous, yes.
Texas is one of those states you can drive all day and still be in Texas.
And wonder why both times.
Yeah, that's shit, right? I'm having just, I mean, it's fun just kind of bullshitting about stuff we both enjoy. Did I tell you I bought a Judge Red role-playing book?
No, but I'm not surprised. Who put out Judge Dredd?
Let me grab it and I'll tell you. And I bought it because A, it's cool. B, it's Judge Dredd and I like Judge Dredd. But I bought it because it was a cool looking book. Does that make sense?
You've seen my book collection, yes.
Cover, front and back, check it out, are metal.
Yeah, that's reflective.
And they're hinged. And I bought it at a book, you know, at a gaming store in the used, and Rebellion. And I bought it because it was cool. Unbeknownst to me, it is signed, and it's number 186 of 200.
Nice. The metal hinged cover feels thematically appropriate for Judge Dredd.
And then a buddy of mine, Cliffy, he was like, oh, dude, that was like a Kickstarter that was like ridiculously expensive or something. I was like, awesome, I bought it used.
I think the only way to make it more thematically appropriate is if you were to put some bullet dents in it.
Yeah, that would have been hilarious. I am the law.
I picked up the Cowboy Bebop role-playing game over Kickstarter.
I bought my copy at PAX because you're like, Glenn, you should not buy this. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge.
And then we pulled Mike over and showed him.
And he bought it.
Which is, that's always the problem with book collectors. Which, you know, I've made no secret of my own book collection, but you are a book collector as well.
I am.
You're also a dice collector, which I'm not. I have a lot of dice, but you actually actively seek out. And we looked at a lot of gorgeous dice together while we were walking through PAX.
Yes.
I do have a set of awesome dice you sent me from your friend Alex's company that were for Gary Con that we never went to. Thanks, COVID.
Yeah. Thanks, COVID. Had a lot of fun at PAX. It was fun. It would have been fun anyway, but it was more fun because you showed up.
That's what I've told everybody about PAX is I would have had a blast. I would have had a grand time. But because I ran into you within 5 minutes of hitting the floor, I had a fucking fantastic time.
Yeah. You know, and we got to go romp around and just be dumbasses with, you know, Cliffy and Mike. I mean, you know, Mike wasn't being a dumbass like Cliffy, you and I were, but...
Sure.
But still.
But Mike still threw out the occasional one.
Let's go look at that table over there. They have things that I want to see. Okay, Mike, let's go.
Watching him and the other guy argue whose card was going to get used at the bar. And I don't know them, so I just kind of let it happen until you went, Jay, take one. I just reached in and grabbed.
Yep.
It happened to be the other guy's. And so I don't know what kind of card he had, but like I was getting ignored at the bar. Finally, I get to make our order. I hand the card off and that dude immediately became attentive.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need one of them's.
Uh-huh.
But we got to sit and drink and have a nice time while they talked business. And then I will say, though, the one moment of the night that was both awful and funny and great at the same time was when we sat down at that one bar. We asked if they had ciders. They said, no, but if you mix these two things, maybe it'll taste like that.
That was horrible. Oh, God, that was so... Oh, my God.
That's why it was the worst and one of the best moments, because we all went, hell yeah, let's go. And you and I muscled them down, and Cliffy did all right. And I don't remember what the concoction was. And maybe that's because, you know, I trauma blocked it out.
I think it's because we trauma blocked it out, brother, because it was bad. You and I took that first sip and we looked at each other. And then you like looked back and my glass was empty.
Yep.
And you were like, oh, Glenn went with the, this is so horrible. I'm just going to chug it to get it over with mode.
Yes. I'm not wasting my $9.
Oh,
What have you done in your life to have PTSD? Well, see, there was this one time at a bar.
And God love her. She tried.
She was a sweetheart.
She tried.
But other than that, she was fantastic. She took good care of us. She brought us everything we needed. We did a couple rounds of shots. We had a very small table with four big guys and a lot of tiny glasses.
Yes.
But that drink was awful and amazing at the same time.
You are correct. That was horrible. And I powered through mine, and then I finished his. Cliff choked down that last half of his.
I babied mine until the second glass came, and then I fucking hammered it the rest of the way.
Or when we all went out to eat at the Italian joint, and just the amount of shit stacking that was going on at that table. No one was safe.
No one was safe. Everybody had a story. Everybody was from different parts of the country, different types of backgrounds. We had both a nice conversation and, yes, a lot of shit stacking.
When Alex had her bring out a fucking apron, I lost it.
That gal rolled with every punch.
Oh, yeah.
She took care of us. When one of us tried to use her to insult another, she fucking flowed right along. She made it happen. I'm just saying, she had good improv instincts.
Oh my, she was awesome. But it was just like you were the safest one at the table because you were the newest one at the table.
Yes.
And the two people you had interacted with the most was Cliff and I. And Cliff and I would stack shit. And then Alex started stacking shit on you because he thought, oh, he's fine.
Yep.
He'll laugh about this.
And then I don't remember the other guy's name, but he seemed cool.
Maple Syrup.
Yes. I think his show looks incredible.
Cliff said he's going this year.
Oh, nice.
Cliff's going to go to that con and going to give a, he's going to give us a AAR about it.
Yeah, that show looked, I mean, from everything he showed us and just chatting with him, that show looked incredible.
Looks and sounds amazing, but I don't know if I want to go to Canada for a convention.
I would love going to Canada if it was like Montreal, Toronto, or Vancouver, but this is, I don't remember where. What was it? GameCon Canada or Canada GameCon?
Yes.
Yeah, it was CCG or CGC or GCC. It looked incredible. And he seemed to be like a genuinely sweet guy, fun and easy to chat with, and very excited about the show he's putting on.
And I stacked a relentless amount of shit on him.
Yes.
Was that wrong?
Eh. You were welcoming him to the group.
Yeah. And, you know, and he who remained nameless was looking at me like, what are you doing? I'm like, having fun. I don't work for you anymore.
This was a well-vetted group, and me and he were the two newest at the table. But he at least knew Alex and your buddy. So he was new to you and I. But his show sounds fantastic. Alex was a madman, and we kept it rolling until good 4:30 in the morning before lumbering back to our hotels. And I guarantee you there was a better place to eat in Philly than Maggiano's. But it was close to their hotel, and they set up the reservation. So who am I to complain?
Yeah, it was okay.
I would go back to Philly. I walked the streets of Philly a lot every morning between leaving the hotel and getting to the floor. I would go back to Philly.
If I go to that show next year, I will take a windbreaker.
Yes.
To wear over my hoodie, because downtown Philly with that wind cutting through those negative. Not today, Satan.
I had to put in my earbuds just to keep the wind from hurting my ears. You know, I had my hoodie. I had put the hood up. I put the earbuds in, and I was able to walk all right. But yeah, a nice pair of gloves, maybe a windbreaker. But you know, you're throwing a convention in Philadelphia in the winter.
Yes.
I would love to go out to the original PAX out in Seattle, but I'm sure that's probably Gen Con big or bigger.
I don't know, but it would be fun.
I know Tommy said he had a show out in Seattle, but I know nothing about it. I asked for details. I didn't get them. So I don't even know the name to look it up. Feels like, you know, gaming conventions today, with a good plan, you could throw a lot of dice and have a good time. Or if you want to chuckles the thing, like you and I do, you can have some nice drink, walk around and chat with some cool people.
Oh, that one morning when you dropped off those monsters at the booth because I wasn't there.
Yes.
Frank's daughter, she got me a text. She's like, your lifeblood is at the booth. And I'm like, I got back to the booth and I'm like, where is it? And she goes, it's that bad.
I was out. I had walked 8 or 9 blocks and I found breakfast. And I kept walking basically until I found breakfast that didn't have a line waiting in the cold. I don't mind standing in line, but I wanted an inside line.
Uh-huh.
And so I walked about 9 blocks till I found a spot. It was incredible. I mean, it was incredible. On the way back, you were like, hey, do you mind grabbing me a monster? So I was like, sure. Well, if I'm going to walk in, I'll grab 3. And as soon as I walked in, I was like, these are for Beast. I don't know if any of these people know your actual name. So they called you Beast. I call you Beast. These are for Beast. And she was like, is he going to put those right in the vein? I said, probably. She goes, I'll let him know. She set it down.
Yes. Yes. And it was, I was like, sweet, because I didn't get a chance to get one that morning.
I couldn't get a flight back after the show floor closed, and I wasn't a vendor, so I didn't have to stay till the very bitter end of a show. So I was telling you, oh, my flight leaves at this point. I've got to leave. I'll probably leave about this time because I don't know what security looks like. For whatever reason, my app didn't supply the check mark so that I can go through the don't take your shoes off line. You were like, actually, my flight is within 30 minutes of yours. Why don't you just fuck off for like 30 extra minutes? We'll ride together. Yes, let's do that. But the other joke of that whole weekend, and instead of letting it be shit stacked on me, we turned it into a full-on joke between us and everyone else, including old Mike, was that on my way to Philadelphia, I got groped by TSA. I'm going to use the back of my hands. And I was like, all right, I don't know what you're talking about. And then he rubbed my ass and turned around and rubbed my junk. And I was like, oh.
Not gay if it's TSA.
That was the shirt we kept seeing. And I just clapped him on the shoulder and I said, I hope that was good for you. And he just looked at me like, fuck you. And then at the exact same moment, my shit came through security and I only had one shoe in the bin.
That was the best part of that whole story.
So I'm waving at the guy who sits behind the computer, and the guy who just frisked me is like, what do you need? I was like, my second shoe. And he yells at the guy running the camera, and the guy looks, he stands up and he pokes his head. He's like, oh, it fell off. I guess the rubber curtain knocked it out of the bin. And he's like, well, I got to run it back through security just in case to be safe. I'm like, okay. Like legitimately, there's nothing safe about people taking off their shoes. Statistically, it has proven absolutely nothing, but sure. Why not? Let's go. So he takes my shoe and puts it in somebody else's bin. That bin happened to be somebody's backpack. And I'm standing there beside this older looking gentleman. And he's like got an eyebrow cocked as he sees them put my shoe with his backpack and run it back through security. And the guy goes, your backpack didn't scan because of his shoe. So we got to scan both of them just in case. And we both look at each other and like we're on the verge of laughing because his backpack was like the proper army camo with his fucking name badge velcroed on and his rank velcroed on. For real? He goes, man, I guess. And I went, thank you for your service. And he fucking lost it. So we're standing at security laughing at the TSA as they scan this serviceman's backpack just to be safe and my fucking shoe.
Yeah. You had to go to the other terminal, right?
Yes.
So I go into my terminal. This is leaving. And I get through security. No problem.
Same.
And I've got like an hour and a half till I board. And I'm walking and I hear someone say my name in the Philadelphia airport. And I look. And this dude's looking at me and I'm looking at him and I'm going through the old Rolodex. He goes, you're Glenn, yeah? And I go, yeah, my name's Glenn. He goes, Glenn Grayson? And it clicked. I'm like, holy shit, what's going on, Brocky? I haven't seen Brock in 12 years. My one of my best friends, you've heard me talk of him, Brick.
Yes.
This is his youngest son.
So Brick had a Brock? Is there a Brack in there?
Brocky and I catch up, and he sits down with me because he had just got done eating. So I went and had a sandwich and a beer, and he had a beer. And we caught up, but he had been at PAX all weekend. And I was like, oh, I was at PAX. He's like, where were you? He's like, I was at the Artalthorian booth, you know, the guys that do cyberpunk.
On the floor, I ran into Flounder and Stromner, which are two old Warcraft buddies. And so you and I were standing there chatting and Flounder comes over day two and he's got his full like 9-inch mohawk. And he walks up and he's like, hey, how's it going, guys? I was like, let me introduce you guys.
Yeah, he was cool.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun. He was I don't remember what he used to do, but then he went to culinary school to become a baker. I guess when he got tired of waking up at 3 a.m. to make bread, he ran a game store for a while. Him and Strom were there for a bit and I got to hang out with them some. In the airport, I ran back into our friend Tommy, who wanted to chat up G.I. Joe. He knows Lenny and Emily from the Hasbro G.I. Joe team. We talked for about 20 or 30 minutes, just him talking about him growing up with G.I. Joe when we weren't sitting in Lauren's suite. And I left him with the same question you started our friendship with. What's your 5-man team? Go. Don't think about it. Just tell me. PAX was a fun weekend. Very outside of my normal, since I have not been part of the gaming community since the 90s. And gaming has not been the center of my Venn diagram since the 90s.
Well, you're part of the gaming community now because you know some people.
Somehow, I've gone from loving Chuckles to being friends with all of my friends seem to be Chuckles. I do my best to be Chuckles because we all seem to fucking know a guy.
That was one of my favorite discussions we had that weekend, Jay, was the fact that neither one of us becomes starstruck.
Correct.
He's not a douche. Okay, I'll talk to him more. But if he's a douche, fuck this guy.
I've been starstruck 3 times in my life. None of them have been super weird.
But the look on your face, though, and I was like, hey, this is my buddy, Lauren. And you're like, hey, Lauren, nice to meet you. So what do you do? And he was like, I own Catalyst. And you were like, oh, awesome. Okay.
And then everybody was like, well, I mean, right in front of him, they're like, he hates people. He likes me? Yeah, well, Glenn introduced you. Lauren goes, give it time. Everybody's stacking shit at this place. But I mean, that's the gaming community, right? It's a bunch of fucking like shit talkers and improvers. I picked up the Battletech because of you and my buddy Mark. And Alexander was looking at the models last night and he was like, I like this one more than this one and blah, blah. And I was like, bro, these are just the two that came with the beginner set. It's a Vindictor and a Griffin. There's more.
Those are okay, Mac, well, for midweight.
Sure. I just said, you know, this is a Vindicator and a Griffin. There are more mechs. This has been around for 40 years. And he goes, oh, that's cool. Next thing I know, I'm like, why the fuck are you on your phone, man? He's like, oh, I'm looking at Battletech. He's like, I kind of like this one. I want you to get this Rough Rider set because there's a mech in here that I like. He's like, it looks cool. And I was like, well, that's a good place to start. I said, I'll tell you what, you read the quick start guide and I'll buy you that mech.
That's awesome because you gotta stress to A, too, that there's clan mechs and Innersphere mechs.
He'll figure that out.
My two favorite mechs One is a clan mech and one is an Innisphere mech. And they are both 100-ton monsters.
Sure.
Light mechs are cool. Now, fuck you. I want to kill everybody. My favorite Innisphere mech, obviously, is an Atlas. Everybody likes Atlases. And my favorite clan mech is a mech that not a lot of people know what it is. It's called a Mothakari.
Okay.
And it is fuck you at range.
So it's the Mortarman's dream of mechs?
It has two arms, and each arm has a large EPC cannon and a heavy long-range laser. And they are, Mothakari means woodcutter axe, and they just chop down other mechs.
Perfect. I haven't played Battletech since the 90s, which I haven't played Shadowrun since the 90s. I haven't played Cyberpunk since the 90s. Fuck, we have a trend. Gaming used to be very, very, very close to the center of my Venn diagram. It's just, you know, it's drifted. It's still important to me, but it's not. And honestly, like, you guys have helped keep it as close to center as it is.
I love gaming. I love gaming. I game all the time. Boone asked me, he goes, hey, Glenn, if you were going to run a game for us, what would you want to run? And I was thinking, and John goes, what about Spycraft? Boone being Boone goes, all right, guys, I'm going to preface this right now. Glenn runs an ultra bloody realistic Spycraft game. Because Spycraft is set like right now. You're a spy. You have all of today's technology and Spycraft gadgets. You know, like taser cufflinks and flashbang pins, you know, James Bond shit. And I'm like, I love that game.
I've actually never played it. I don't think I've read the first book, but I've read parts of it. I've flipped through it, but I've never played that game. It sounds fun.
It is. Spycraft is a blast. I like Spycraft, you know. I like Cyberpunk, obviously. Hell, I like Shadowrun. Hell, I have a character that is canon in Shadowrun now.
I knew you had one that's canon in Cyberpunk, but I didn't know you had one in Shadowrun.
I have one in Cyberpunk too. Or I mean, Shadowrun too.
I have your Cyberpunk mini.
It's kind of cool.
It is kind of cool. So I told Alexander if he reads the quick start guide, we can sit down and we can throw one game. And then I'm willing to buy him whatever mech he thinks is interesting. Maybe the core book or something so he can learn about the different types of mechs, factions, and et cetera. Again, it's been 30 years.
Let's end it here. Thanks again for spending time with us discussing toys and other geeky things. Our logo was made by Rhino. The music we use was created by Self Help. You can find Joel on Instagram at Order of Battle Pod. Jason is on Twitter at Order of Battle PD. Our email is orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and thank you for your likes, comments, outreaches, and just being here with us.
All right, Jay. I'll talk to you later, brother.
All right, man. Thank you for doing this.
This has been the Order of Battle.